Hello, homies. Welcome to another episode of Easily Entertained. I am your host, Maddie McLean. So glad to be sitting down in a closet. I am visiting my parents in Santa Fe. So currently, the studio is the closet. And I mean that in the literal sense. So just to clarify. I love airports. I do. Even despite, you know, lots of the stress that comes with it and everything, I absolutely love it. And part of that was because I also loved Delta Sky Club. See, I was a Southwest girly for far and wide majority of my life. But then I was introduced to Delta and started to fly far more frequently with them and got the credit card. I'm like, let's go. I'm going to get my own status, you know, feeling good, feeling excited. And turns out everybody else had that same thought. Because of this, now Delta has hand slapped us all. And unless you spend like your entire salary, essentially 75K plus, then you're not going to the Sky Club anymore. So wondering if it's worth it. But this is definitely a first world problem. So I'm just going to forge on forward for us all before I get canceled or anything like that. So today, what are we talking about today? Give you a few updates on what's going on both in the news and inside the tube. By that, I mean the TV. I'm not sure why I called it the tube. Don't think I've ever done that. There's a first time for everything, though, folks. We'll talk all about Real Housewives Shannon Bedore, who was arrested for a DUI and a hit and run. Yikes. And kind of crack open the metaphorical history book of Real Housewives, those who have ended up serving time in prison or being caught in a huge scandal. Because this relates to our main topic, we'll talk about Elizabeth Holmes and her post-conviction life, because it's simply, you could not write a storybook that is better than the life she lived out in the midst of her life crumbling around her. And we'll talk about Jen Shah, who was on or was a little bit of both on Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. And we'll talk about her story and how a rich, affluent, notorious housewife. I hate that word too, but anyways, that's for definitely another topic. But how a housewife ended up being caught in a storm of fraud, and she's now currently serving time. And the connection being that Jen Shah and Elizabeth Holmes are friends in their prison. And I find that a little suspicious of the simulation that we're living in right now. I think they made a mistake. I don't think those two worlds were supposed to clash or cross over together, but I'm here for it. I loved when like Lizzie McGuire and That's So Raven on Disney Channel would do like crossover episodes. I thought that was the craziest, most creative shit I'd ever seen. So shout out Disney. We loved the crossover eps. We also love that there is no longer an escaped murderer, convict, fugitive on the loose in eastern Pennsylvania. So this definitely took the attention of the entire nation because it is just a wild, wild story and a little also disconcerting. But essentially, a 34-year-old man named Danilo Cavalcante was in the Chester County jail awaiting his transfer over to the prison that he was about to serve time for. This was the day before he was about to spend the rest of his life in jail because, he murdered his ex-girlfriend in front of her two little children. So that's psychopathic and horrible and horrific. And prior to that, that was in April 2021 when he was charged with her murder. And in 2017, he was actually wanted in Brazil for another murder. So yeah, this guy's stealthy. There was a video that went around after news broke that he had escaped the jail. And essentially when that happens, the police will set up a perimeter, kind of like a Red Rover, will you come over situation, but far more advanced, I hope, surrounding the jail in the area where he could be found. And he was able to evade police for nearly 2 weeks. He escaped on August 31st, the day before he was about to serve his life sentence in prison. You have to look up the video. It is the most absurd thing you've ever seen. He literally Spider-Mans, like, goes up on all fours, kind of like parallel to the floor, and like spiders up through a vent. And somehow, I don't know, from there, I guess he was able to find somewhere else to come out. You know, at this point, we've all seen Prison Break and shit, and like Orange is the New Black. It's great. It's great entertainment. Don't get me wrong. And I hope it continues. But are we giving murderers and fugitives and convicts and like con artists, are we giving them like a handbook on what to do and how to do it and all that stuff? I don't know. Something to think about. But anywho, so he was able to escape. And it's wild that the police weren't able to capture him before the 2 weeks. The night that he escaped, just before midnight, Danilo broke into a nearby home that was close to the jail and apparently out of the police's sight, because he was able to steal food, but the homeowners were at home, the whole family, they have kids, that would be terrifying. See Danilo break in and then leave. So they tell the cops that, so they know kind of a general area, at least where he started to travel to, in a general direction. That obviously didn't help. And he later was found on camera in Longwood Gardens, which is like a botanical garden up in Pennsylvania. And so then Longwood Gardens closes down for a few days just because, well, there might be an escaped fugitive living in the flower bushes. And clearly he's a psychopath. So I guess that's probably a safe thing to do. And still not catching him. Days go by. Obviously, people who live in the area are very, very scared and very on alert and very paranoid, as one would be. It only gets worse because then he breaks into another house and steals a gun, and the homeowner tried to shoot after him but did not get him. So not only is he still on the loose, he is now armed. So that's scary. But he had visited some other friends' houses in the area to help him continue to escape and flee from the cops, because this is something that he had done before. Right before they had charged him in 2021, his sister and sister's boyfriend at the time had helped him escape and had provided him food and kind of like a getaway car. So the cops were already on to him a little bit. And I'm not sure why he would do this, but then he goes over to some old co-workers' houses while he's still, this is current day, while he's still on the loose. And all we see, really, we don't know what is said on there, but we see just photos of him, and he had shaven somehow to look different and had changed his footwear so he didn't have the same foot tracks. And luckily, I guess those two old coworkers that he was hoping would help him sent in that footage from their Ring cameras to the cops. Another side note, Ring cameras, have you noticed, have been up, down, left, and center. They're the new paparazzi for the modern person, if you will. We may not have swarms of people outside of our homes with giant expensive DSLR cameras snapping at us. I mean, maybe not all of us, but we don't have that. But what we do have is we do have Ring cameras, and they're always watching. They're always watching. So this, I feel like Ring cameras have come in clutch for a lot of these kinds of cases in true crime, in the true crime world as of recent, from the Idaho 4 to this scenario here with an escaped convict to even apparently there is Ring footage that led to what we're told, the breakup of Joe Jonas and Sophie Turner. And the internet has done a really good job of making memes out of what could have possibly happened on this ring video evidence or whatever that led to their divorce. But we've really taken a wrong turn. So I'm going to loop back. Danilo Cavalcante. So he had just gone to visit his old coworkers who essentially turned him in, did not help him, luckily, and is still on the loose, but ultimately through a heat tracking sensor, far beyond my technical expertise or understanding, but it senses heat. Yeah, so the police used this heat sensor as they were flying over the area and were able to see in the woods like this little kind of the tracker went off that suggested that there was a human there. And so down below on the ground, policemen sent their doggos to go look after him and chase his scent. And sure enough, a dog by the name of Yoda captured Danilo Cavalcante. I love that a pupper was the hero and really brought him home. I think that's amazing. I feel a little bit conflicted when it comes to the use of dogs in policing and kind of activity like that. I'm sure, like, dogs love to be told what to do. Unlike your boyfriend, your dog loves to be told what to do. That's just, they're used to being submissive, essentially. Most dog breeds anyways. And it gives them kind of an order in their life. Like, you know, their human leads the pack. They'll feed them. They'll take them, yada, yada. And that's kind of how you get misbehaved dogs are those that are like just anarchists. But anywho, I love that his name was Yoda too. Yoda captured Danilo Cavalcante and he is taken back to jail. So no more escaped murderer in the Pennsylvania area. And for that, we are grateful. The cops were clearly also grateful because they took like this really weird group photo with all the dogs and all this. I mean, it looked like 50 cops just surrounding Danilo and like, I don't know if they were smiling, but at least we got some soft smiles in there. But they like took a few photos. It was weird. It was like a trophy. It was like one of those, you know, dudes on Hinge or Tinder or Bumble or whatever. The hunters that inevitably have a picture of them like holding up like a steer or like, I don't think that's the right thing at all. My Texan roots need some work there when it comes to hunting language. But yeah, they were essentially taking a picture with Danilo, kind of posing with him like a trophy, which I felt was gross. I mean, even for escaped scary psychopath murderers, they're still humans, you know? Just feels weird. But whatever. I guess there's a whole lot of other worse things that we should tackle first when it comes to the police. So anyways, that's for another podcast. That's for NPR to cover and not for me to cover. And for that, we're also grateful. We also found out that this past Saturday, Real Housewives of Orange County Shannon Bador was arrested for a DUI and a hit and run in Newport Beach. This is really sad, and there's simply no reason to be drunk driving. We've got Uber and Lyft and all that good shit. But first of all, nobody was injured. She had been driving with her dog in the car, and the dog's okay too, and clearly driving really erratically and ran straight into a house. It was a small, narrow road in Newport Beach and clipped like the outside of a house. And you can see like oil from her car spilling everywhere. There's bricks and stones and it's more than just a clip. That's kind of what they had, at least initial reports had said that she'd clipped the house. Nah, this bitch ran into the house instead of copping up to it and facing accountability for her actions. She hopped right back in the car and parked a few streets away and got her dog out, Archie, and started walking him nonchalantly as if she didn't just hit a house and then drive away. But that did not fool the cops, as she allegedly appeared very drunk and they arrested her and took her in, but she was released without bond. This comes after basically an entire season was dedicated to a certain drama between her and a fellow castmate, Gina, who years back had also gotten arrested for a DUI. They both had gone through some really tough experiences, still absolutely no reason to do such a thing. But supposedly Shannon had helped out Gina and recover and gotten her a lawyer but kept bringing it up years and years later, saying that she rescued Gina and, oh my gosh, I did this for you, and karma came out to play, I'll tell you what. So just glad that nobody is hurt. That will make for a very interesting storyline next season, as the most recent season just finished, at least filming. So they'll be filming for the next season. In other news, my world was a little bit rocked today as I discovered that James Marsden turned 50 years old this past weekend. And in my mind, he was forever 35, which means that I've aged two. So yeah, unfortunately, that's how it works and made me feel very old. But damn, he looks good. Most recently, he was on the show Jury Duty, which was on Amazon's Freevee. It is super entertaining if you have not seen it yet. It's kind of a mix of reality TV and fictional, as the concept is super new and the humor is kind of, I would say, very adjacent to The Office, kind of deadpan humor. But the concept is super interesting. So it is a fake trial and a fake case, but this group of people is put together and selected for the jury. And the only person that is not aware that this is fake is one poor bastard, one guy named Ronald Gladden, and everybody else is playing a character but himself, including James Marsden as himself, a parody of himself rather. And it's super funny. I highly recommend you watch it. It's one of those shows that you can put on maybe after you watch something scary or a true crime doc or whatever, and you need to chill out and just kind of giggle before you go to bed. It's one of those. But it's really whenever. Highly recommend. It just blew my damn mind that James Marsden is 50. So felt the need to share that with you guys so that I'm not the only one who feels really old. We also got the wonderful news the other day that Jen Shaw from Real Housewives of Salt Lake City and Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos are friends in prison. So I felt like it would be timely and also just a fun little trip down memory lane to give you the lowdown on Elizabeth Holmes's post-conviction life, as well as Jen Shaw's alleged crimes that landed her in prison. Because really, it's just a good story. You don't have to follow Real Housewives to enjoy a good story. So buckle on up and let's get into it. Elizabeth Holmes was only 19 years old when she founded Theranos. The name is a combination of therapy and diagnosis, with the entirety of the company based on being able to take just a few drops of blood compared to a big vial when you get your blood drawn, and being able to then diagnose people with just those few drops. So whether it's detecting things like cancer or terminal illnesses to herpes, to which was eventually added on later, or just any kind of diseases or anything you would test for with blood through their proprietary analyzer, their machine that they were using. So this was supposedly what Theranos was about and was setting them apart and drawing a lot of attention from investors and doctors alike and companies that were really seeing a promise in this. And unfortunately, as we came to learn, that was all a pile of bullshit. And the whole company and Elizabeth Holmes and Sonny Balwani all came crumbling down. But a bit of a timeline there. So it's founded 2003. 2009 is when Sonny Balwani joins, who at the time was Elizabeth's boyfriend, who was 20 years her senior. They met while studying abroad in Beijing. Sonny was getting his MBA and Elizabeth was getting her bachelor's, but they were doing a semester abroad. So fast forward, and they have been maintaining contact and keeping up clearly a friendship as they moved in together. And that was kept a secret as Sonny Balwani became COO and president of the company after providing nearly $10 million in funding. He'd previously worked in the software industry and had a successful run of a business of his own that he eventually sold. So Elizabeth took him on and he agreed to jump right on the Theranos train. So later on, he joined in 2009. 2013 is when their partnership with Walgreens started. The next year, Elizabeth Holmes was named one of the richest women in America, valued at $4.9 billion. So 11 years later, after the founding of Theranos, that is when Elizabeth Holmes really takes off into the limelight. She's on covers of every magazine. People are going crazy. And of course, she's wearing her Steve Jobs impersonation, black turtlenecks, and red lipstick, and a really deep voice, because apparently this makes you pay attention a little bit more. So maybe I should try this. That hurts my throat. Anyways, so she's super, super wealthy. Things are going great. Under the radar, they're still dating. The machine doesn't work. They're secretly doing it on other machines that already exist and require a vial of blood and could actually only perform 12 out of the 200 tasks that Theranos alleged their machine could do. That's obviously not discovered until later, because what really started to push Theranos into the hot seat was a Wall Street Journal expose. And highly, by the way, recommend that you watch Hulu's docuseries on it. There's plenty of other shit. There's a book, if that's more your style, and another document. There's so many things. There's so many things. There's a podcast. There's everything. But after this article comes out, they get several inspections done that they then fail in their medical lab. And this is made known. This is public information. Walgreens backs out. Retailers support leaves. People are jumping ship, as they should. Mind you, this is 2017. But now Holmes's net worth drops from $4.9 billion to $0. In the year before, in 2016, Balwani had backed out and Theranos had restructured, I guess, with the hopes that that would make everyone think that everything's chill and everything's fine. But, and I'm quoting this from a New York Times article that I will link in the show notes. It's in March 2018, the SEC charges Holmes and Balwani with massive fraud involving more than $700 million from investors through an elaborate years-long fraud in which they exaggerated or made false statements about the company's technology, business, and financial performance. The SEC alleges Holmes and Balwani knew that Theranos' proprietary analyzer could perform only 12 of the 200 tests it published on its patient testing menu. That's in March. By June, they are indicted, and come September, Theranos is fully dissolved. From there on, 2018, when they're indicted, the trials don't end up happening until 2021 and 2022 for Holmes and Balwani, respectively. It was pushed out for a variety of reasons. One being the pandemic happened. Two being Elizabeth Holmes got pregnant. And not with Sonny Balwani's child, as they had broken up when he left the company. And part of the reason why their trials were actually separated, because originally they were going to be tried together, Elizabeth and Sonny, those trials were separated because part of Elizabeth's defense was that she alleged that Sonny had been abusive throughout the duration of their relationship, which caused her behavior to largely be under the control of Sunny Balwani, who was really in charge of handling the medical lab itself and Elizabeth of running the company. Ultimately, what the judge decided is Elizabeth was convicted and began her 11-year sentence earlier this year in May. She was deemed guilty on 4 counts of wire fraud and conspiracy to commit wire fraud against investors. And in total, she owes over $452 million in restitution to the likes of wealthy individuals and companies, including Rupert Murdoch and Wells Fargo. She likely is not going to be able to pay all that back, given she's now in jail for 11 years. And even if she wanted to, that sounds impossible. Sunny Balwani, on the other hand, is serving his 12-year sentence. He was convicted for far more. He was convicted on 11 counts. Anyways, so let's rewind and let's talk about Elizabeth Holmes and her personal journey throughout, during the conviction and the downfall of Theranos and in prison now. So it was not until 2017, as she had already been, they were about to be indicted, but the attention was already on Theranos and on Elizabeth and those that work for her for being a complete sham. And things are falling apart. People are losing their jobs, obviously, left and right. It's a really shit situation for everybody. This is when she moves out of Sunny Balwani's apartment and moves to San Francisco, where she meets her now husband, Billy Evans. And that is when they have a baby. And this is right before sentencing. They have not gone through the trial yet, but they meet in San Francisco and at a house party. So at the time when they met, he's 25, she's 32. But think about it. Elizabeth Holmes had not lived a regular 20s. You know, the fun, exploratory, what you typically experience in your 20s. Instead, she was running a company, only drinking green juice, getting up at 5 a.m. and defrauding people left and right, as one does. So we are now in 2019. Billy and Elizabeth had been dating for a few years. They have a child together, and the trial date was set. So they're waiting for the trial to happen and dating. During this time, as the trial hadn't happened, they are living in an RV for 6 months in a nomadic lifestyle. And even in this interview that Elizabeth has, she describes themselves as Bonnie and Clyde. And she's this whole different person. And during that time, they went to our favorite Burning Man and had a secret wedding the following year. Keep in mind that everybody who worked at Theranos has lost their job and are scrambling to find a way to make ends meet. And pictures are coming out of Elizabeth Holmes at Burning Man with her boyfriend at the time, and just having the time of her life, really, just letting her hair down. And seems like a completely different person, just gives off the wrong message. But it appears she is making the most of her prison sentence as she is taking a ab workout class called Shamazing Abs by the one, the only, Jen Shaw of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. It's very interesting. The cast is one of the most diverse they've had and full of drama, especially now that Jen Shaw is behind bars in prison. This show has had a total of 3 seasons, and in the first one, we get to know Jen Shaw as kind of the firecracker. She's ready to pop off. She's ready to provide that Real Housewives entertainment that we all know and love. And so she's really the ideal housewife for the franchise. She is just decked out in diamonds all the time, over-the-top personality, and throwing parties that cost her over 80 grand at what she calls the Ski Shaw Lay. Jen Shaw, get it? Yep, good job. but she has a husband and 2 kids, and we're not really told throughout the first few seasons, like, how she gets all this money. They've got a giant mansion, you know, driving Porsches around. Like, she's got a team around her doing her glam. And nobody really knows how she's making that money. She would answer with just a bunch of buzzwords of, like, I work a digital business, you know, the algorithms. And it made no sense. So that was already kind of a huge question mark of how exactly she's making this money. Her husband is an assistant coach at the University of Utah, which you can make a good living with, but not that kind of living. We still don't know. And then we eventually do. So she, throughout the seasons, also had an assistant named Stu Smith, who does not fit the bill for an assistant. I don't know. He's just this older man, but they seem like besties. They really care for each other and they're business partners. What the business does, no one knows until it is revealed that this whole time, Jen Shaw is accused of being involved in a telemarketing scheme that all ultimately plays out on the reality show. And Stu Smith, her assistant, was also indicted for telemarketing scheme, which ultimately was targeting the elderly, promising them to launch their online businesses. And if they just buy these coaching sessions, they'll build their website, or buy like a social media package, just thousands and thousands of dollars. But they were for services that don't really exist. They would not help them. They are scammers. And apparently it was this whole ring of scammers. There was one that led the FBI to Jen Shaw and to kind of this telemarketing, what they call a sales floor of a telemarketing scheme in Utah. It is literally mid-filming while the women are heading to a trip on the show that she rips off her mic and she gets a phone call and she's told she needs to get out. She can't leave. She needs to get out of the car and she is straight up taken in by the FBI right outside this like big Sprinter van while filming crews are there. She maintained her innocence for a good year as this is going on. Judicial system seems to work pretty slowly, huh? But despite having all these charges against her, she went ahead and filmed and stayed on the show for the second season, still flaunting all of this money that she has, flaunting her lavish lifestyle, these diamonds and everything, an expensive wardrobe, while she is waiting to be tried. So that was stupid. And my favorite part of that is that her Real Housewives catchphrase was ultimately used in the trial. So season two comes, the charges are out. We're looking at prison sentence of nearly 20 years. Like, this is serious. And her one-liner, each housewife has like a catchphrase or a one-liner. Hers is, the only thing I'm guilty of is being shamazing. So yeah, that really happened. But ultimately, she changed her not guilty plea to guilty after her assistant right before her had also done the same thing, which was not a good sign for Jen Shaw. They both were sentenced to jail, and she's only serving a 6.5-year sentence, though. But that is where Jen Shaw and Elizabeth Holmes, where worlds collide, and it is reported that Jen Shaw is teaching a workout class in prison. They're in Bryan, Texas at a women's only prison over there. And she's teaching shamazing abs. So, you know what? We love to see consistency. And that's consistency right there. She obviously, both of these ladies screwed over so many people. And I feel like for the two of them, it seems like they both want to maintain or prove themselves. And it all surrounds their ego. You know, the people, the victims of their crimes are kind of like third party victims in their minds because they are not seeing this damage that they're causing right in front of them, you know? So it's easy to ignore that when you don't see it. And when you're choosing to do something like this and have either just gotten yourself in too deep and suddenly you're in this huge scheme that you didn't realize you were in. Who knows? Maybe it was like that. I don't know. Or maybe the two of them fully knew what they were doing and just thought that they couldn't get caught. Because I think it takes a certain type of personality to just double down when they're caught too. Both of them maintain their innocence. Elizabeth and Jen continued to deny until it's simply there was nothing left to do. The evidence is stacked against them. And that's when they're finally turned around and kind of tail between their legs. But although I will say there was an interview with Elizabeth Holmes and she said she still wants to make a difference in the healthcare and industry. So she'll be doing that behind bars. It's giving Billy McFarland with Firefest too. What all of these scammers have in common, though, is this narcissistic need to prove their self-importance and just how much value that they bring to the world. And I feel like that's exactly why con artists con again and continue to do so, was because they wholeheartedly believe that they did nothing wrong and their bad intentions were simply caused mistakes, and mistakes happen. Elizabeth Holmes, less so. You see a little bit more forgiveness in her. But when I think of Billy McFarland and Jen Shaw and people like that, that also have this kind of larger than life personality, I think it really does come down to narcissism. And that's a word that has been used and thrown around so much these days. I want to scream when I hear it, because most of the time it's just used in a way that's meant to be, you know, somebody is self-involved or something that's a little bit more everyday, like a personality trait that people can either experience or demonstrate at times. But true narcissism is this having a grandiose sense of self-importance. And according to Dr. Konnikova, narcissists are linked to con artists because they will go to great lengths to maintain the pristine self-image they hold, and they also feel entitled to attention and anything that advances themselves over others, which seems to be exactly what all of these peeps have done. And it's very interesting because I think that the way the mind works in a con artist is close to that of a serial killer. I think that's a little bit of a far line to draw, but, you know, you can see the evolution of how a con artist would then do that to maintain their sense of grandiosity. So it's pretty scary, you know, it's pretty scary at the end of the day. But even though there's tons of stories, and that's because that's what's so fascinating to us and what becomes the subject of TV shows and movies and podcasts and like this one, is because that is not the majority. So no need to live in constant fear. That's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Give us a follow at Easily Entertained Pod on Instagram and follow thing-a-lang on wherever you're streaming your podcasts. And I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye, homies.